know where Glen Road is? Glen Road was dirt and ended in a sort of roundabout. And beyond Glen Road, there was a track that led down to a, well, they called it a street. There was one house down there called Waterfall Road. And the rest was absolute bush. And it was all tea tree, mostly tea tree anyway. And we used to enjoy, you could get in, climb into one of these tea trees on the edge of the road, and we would try to see, us kids, how far through the bush we could get without touching the ground. And you could go from sort of tree, I mean, we were only kids, so we weren't very big and we weren't very heavy, but you could go for ages climbing from tree to tree in this tea tree stuff, otherwise known as Kunzian. And that was certainly one of my rich memories of growing up in Glen Road in the early, this would be about 53, 54. We were in lot 40, we were in number 57, but it started off as lot 40. And we've got some maps that I want to come back to later on because Bill has put them on the back. No, I've only lost them once, Bill. We were in lot 42, and lot 42 shows up on a real estate map dated 1893. So it had been subdivided by then. But we'll come back to that. Now, I invite John. Yes,
sorry, Julie. Was the house on Waterfall Road occupied by the Davises?
Davis.
Because I went to school with a boy called Davis whose father was a rugby player, and they lived in the Waterfall Road in the 50s.
It could be. It was tucked down. It was on the lower side. The house is still there. Yeah, it was on the lower side. Yeah, you could be right. Okay, well, all right. Well, the one I'm thinking of has been there quite a while, but Waterfall Road was a pretty rough old track. Wow.
They definitely lived there.
Yeah. Went down towards the library and down that way to, the dairy, down that way to the creek flowed, and there was a waterfall. It's written on the map. This 18. Well, when I've walked out it, it's not much of waterfall.
It flows after rain. The one that comes...
You mean the one that flies under the sewer pipe?
No.
You mean the other creek that comes down? Yes. Well, the waterfall on this map is written on the what we now call Dairy Creek.
Yeah. That's Wright Creek now, isn't it? Didn't they change the name last year to Wright Creek?
No, it's not the Wright Creek. It's the Dairy Creek, Bill. We'll name the other creek because there is another creek that comes down into those wetlands, which at the moment, as far as I know, is not doesn't have a name. And that could have, I think, that would be the right creek for you, Bill. Now, are there other ideas? Share. John, come on. Now, don't feel that you have to come out the front. Just either stand up or don't stand up. Now, while you're talking, I'm going to find the rest of my stuff.
Pam Donnett's not here today, is she?
Yeah.
Pam, I'll come up here, Pam. I want you to come up here. Because it's always nice when somebody has something at home and they share it with you. And Pam Donnett is proven to be a great sharer of things. Last meeting, Pam came along with this little bundle of photos for me. Now, last year I did a story on Minnie Cole. Remember that? Minnie Cole? And Minnie Cole was a great organiser. She was part of the building of this School of Arts, the fundraising. She was part of the War Memorial fundraising, All Saints Church. She was a great lady who did things here for 50-odd years. And the only thing we didn't have about her was a photo. No photo of Minnie Cole. Anyway, last meeting, Pam Donnett came up to me and said, here's a photo of Minnie Cole. So we now have a photo of Minnie Cole to go with the, and Roger, you'll put this on the website for us. So we now have a lovely photo here of Minnie Cole sitting here at All Saints Church with a group of girls. And her daughter, Alice Propsting, standing next to her with the banner. Now, this group of girls here, Cherry Walker's wife, Jan, was able to identify some of those girls. And if you're here or you know of them, just put your hand up. There's next to Alice is a lady, Janice Raitt, R-A-I-T. Next to her is Diane Watson, married name Diane Hawkins. Next to her is Jennifer Williams, married name Dorhau.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. No.
Yep.
It looks like.
Yep, Dorhau. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next to Minnie is a Denise Mumford.
The name rings a bell.
Yep. And next to her is a lady, Diane Mitchell, married name Brand. Any of those names ring a bell? Because they're clearly girls who went to All Saints Church at West Oakland. So, Pam, thank you very much. For me, who did the mini call and couldn't get a photo of her, it's lovely to have a photo of her now to go with her story.
Right. I haven't got into the church records yet. I'll hope to get in there and maybe get
some. Yeah, okay. More. Now, Kim, you'll be interested because Pam's also taken a photo of various plaques around the place with some stories and photos. So, Roger and you can have a look at those. This one here of Searchlight Lane in West Oakley, near the corner of was it Baker and Lansdowne? Searchlight Lane.
Yeah.
But anyway, the good thing is Pam has gone to the trouble of finding these photos, doing copies, saying, this is yours now, I've done this for you, and particularly for the one of Minnie Cole, I thank you very much, Pam. Thank you. Can I get those to you, Roger?
Yep,
you
yep. On the I'll scan all those.
Yep, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Right, we feel that we've covered Minnie Cole pretty well. Good research. Now, our next challenge is Myra Wall. Right, I hear comments of who? We need to get to know Myra Wall. Myra Wall is famous amongst Oakley Flora and Fauna members because she created a garden, which is now in Oakley Park, and was relatively recently renovated. It's as you drive in towards the Steamroller Park, there is a space on the left before you get to the Steamroller, and there's a track which, following effort by Oakley Flora and Fauna, that track is going to be converted into a wheelchair compatible track that will lead down to the cliffs. And near there, in the car park, in the centre of the car park, in fact, is the Myra Wall Garden. But we're not too sure who Myra Wall is or was. So we're keen to... There were stories of a name appearing down in the South Highlands Way. Is it Robertson Way?
Mittagong.
So clearly she had some influence. So if you know anything about Myra Wall, we'd be keen to know more about her.
Yes, well, when we formed the Flora and Fauna Society, she lived in Wagoona Parade, and she visited us at our house.
Right.
Yes, and I had done some painting, decorative painting, and she wanted me to go and do some at her place. I didn't.
Okay.
But we had met her.
And so she was, what, married? Or is that her married name? Or?
It's Rafe.
No, Rafe's rescuing the coffee situation. But Rafe's got...
my coffee. Mate.
That's right.
Julian, what I know about Myra is being researched because Pam up the back was an uncle. Half uncle was killed in the Second World War. Myra Wall donated £700 to have a memorial made and laid at Mittagong. We didn't know anything about this until a few years ago. Then we found out that the uncle actually didn't die. He was a POW, and on the way back to Japan, the ship was sunk. He was lost in that. Doing the research, we find out that her uncle married just before the war, and his wife only passed away a few years ago. She lived in Hillcrest Avenue, and her ashes are at Warrenora. And I went down to investigate them, and a wall, that's a person wall, actually picked up the ashes, and was trying to find out that that's related to Myra Wall, because Myra paid for the memorial at Mittagong, and we're just trying to get the family back together.
But Bill, Myra Wall never married, did she?
Not as far as we know. She, her brother had children. Yeah, we don't know.
Rafe, just to you've been doing a wonderful job rescuing the coffee. We're talking about Myra Wall. As
yeah, her and her husband, John McFlorin, former.
She was married then.
She was married, was she? Oh, yes. Yeah. They enjoyed it so much, they left a pile of money after they passed away to McFlorin Hall.
And that's what was used to build that garden, was it?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the money
was used. Yeah, did she have any children?
Right.
Well, that could have been her brother's children, though. We don't know. We can't.
No, I see. Yeah.
Patricia Wall was the lady that picked up the ashes. That's all we know. We'd like to trace the family back to try and.
Do you know anything about the memorial?
Reunite.
For down at Mittagong?
Rafe.
You're asking Rafe Grant?
Rafe, do you know anything about the Wall Memorial that she apparently contributed to at Mittagong? That was another project of hers.
There was Japan, he's mentioned in the memorial here in Percival, but when we tried to put him on the memorial here at Oakley, the council couldn't find where he lived, yet we know his wife lived here. Because he was in the Navy all the time, he never turned up in any census. So.
But he did grow up.
He grew up in Oakley, but he must.
That's her brother.
That's.
Myra's husband?
No, Myra must have been the Navy. They lived, I think, at number 11, Winona.
Seven,
something like that. They lived close together.
And that was Winona West.
Winona West, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a muddle of names with no way of putting them all together at the moment.
Yeah, so that's a little project we have. Clearly we do have some information about the lady, and the reason why her name has come up is that those who know anything about Oakley Park, as I say, know there is the Myra Wall Garden, and a lot of people say, gosh, that's nice, who on earth was Myra Wall? And it looks like we're putting together a picture there. Yes, that's true. So it's a matter of doing a little bit of research. But I guess I mention her name particularly because it's an example of, if you know of people who you feel, yes, they left an impression. Local people, when we're saying memories of Oakley, it doesn't have to be walking in the tea trees. It could be some person, a name that has come up as Bill Monaghan. You know, Bill was a wonderful person. And we need... a summary of his career. If anybody would like to have a look at his career. I remember Bill. Beg your pardon?
He has two sons with him.
Yes, that's right. It wasn't all that long ago. I remember him coming to Oakley West School and teaching the scripture, the Catholic scripture at Oakley West. And it was my privilege to meet him there. And another name that we possibly have not paid enough attention to is somebody else I met at Oakley West School on election day. A very old man, by the name of Miles Dunphy. And we really haven't paid enough attention to Miles Dunphy, of course, who's just a wonderful Oakley. He wasn't born in Oakley, but he was an Oakley resident for many, many, many years. And now is recognised in the Museum of Australia and elsewhere for his conservation work. So there are rich pickings there. Now that's given lots of people a chance to polish up their best memory of Oakley. So this is not me up the front, this is now a forum.
There's four of you.
Kim.
Just a brief one. I was down in Canberra a couple of months ago at the National Portrait Gallery, and there was a portrait painted by Cliff Peer, P-E-I-R, and I found his name mentioned in my Sandstone talk because he lived in a house in...
That's Jan Peer's father.
Yeah, and...
Jan Crane's father.
The street.
Annette Street.
Yeah, lived in Annette Street. And he actually, he was an artist, and he painted a portrait, which was hanging in the National Portrait Gallery, of Cath Walker, or otherwise known as Ujuru Noonuka, who you may have heard of, a famous...
Was she the Aboriginal...
Aboriginal woman, yes. Cath Walker, and she went back to her Aboriginal name of Ujuru Noonuka. And her portrait is in the National Portrait Gallery, and it was painted by Cliff Peer. And the story goes that she stayed with Cliff Peer while he painted her portrait in that house in Annette Street. That was back in the 30s, I think it was. So there's a little bit of a connection with Oatley through that portrait, which has some high recognition. The other one was a portrait of Dame Mary Gilmore, who we know the street next to Oatley Park is named after her. But then I got to thinking, well, why was it named after her? A street in Oatley, right next to Oatley Park. I don't know. We may have some information here, but I haven't had time to look it up. But somebody else may know the history of that, why it was called Dame Mary Gilmore Drive. Okay, so if she donated that, did she have some local connection here?
She opened it. Yeah, I don't think she has any other connection. No.
Oh, okay. That's all right.
Okay.
I'll add one more to you.
June is standing and she's not leaving, she's going to share something with us. And then over to you, Bill.
He mentioned the tea trees down over Oakley West. I think you people remember the tea trees that were here near the railway station? Big,
thick.
Yeah, before that
put
that
car. Yeah, so you took
all the trees away. Oh, no, that's not a good reputation I want to cultivate. Thank you, June.
Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
There's nothing worse as I'm getting deafer, I'm afraid, but I cannot hear, so I always ask people, can you hear me and without a microphone? I remember Jim Nicholson. His people had the paper shop here way back in the 30s. I was born in 26 in Oakley. My people came here in 22. As did the other Stevens family who were in Ada Street. Their house has been lived in by Alec Bleach. It would be as old as my one in Razor Street, which I had sold long ago. And I went to remember when Jim was last here, I think he told us about the fact there was something special going on from the Navy down in Canberra. And he was to go down to that. Do you remember if he got there?
Can I just say that Jim's funeral was a joyous occasion. Mm. It was a privilege to be there, I must say. Mm. Much of that came up. I know about his military, naval career. Just to add there, June, he did. It came up that he was involved. He was on a corvette off the coast of Ceylon, and his job on the corvette was targeting the anti-submarine equipment, and they detected what appeared to be a Japanese submarine, and he was responsible for firing the weapon. Which resulted in the sinking of the submarine. And it did come up that he received a medal for that, but it touched him deeply that because of what he did, necessarily 42 men died.
Was his sister there, Jessie?
Was...
He had an older sister, Norma, who I assume would be dead before Jim, and Jessie is my age, 91 she would be. I'll be 91 in June. She went to Oakley Public School, as did I. Oakley Public School was built, according to the paper that I got, in 17, which was during the First World War. So it was amazing that buildings were being built here in Australia.
June, this was Oakley Public School in 1917.
Ah, must be.
1922 they went to the new school.
That's the brick school's 22.
But I'm glad you raised it. It's 100 years this year for Oakley Public School. They've got a lot of celebrations on.
Here.
I'll bring some brochures next time. Anyone who went to the public school will be invited to their various functions.
Well, I don't know whether they'll invite me. I taught at Oakley Public School for 12 months, then I was sent to the country. I was 20 when I was sent 400 miles away to a little place called Murrumbi, down near Leeton. In those days, when you were in the Department of Education, you went where you were sent. There was none of this you wouldn't go. You were bonded for 3 years. You didn't dare get pregnant because you have to pay your bond up. So that kept you on the straight and narrow. And things were quite different. So that Oakley School, I remember, we had a teacher called Annie Hodge. You might remember her. I believe she had a disabled brother. He may have been a chemist, but she never married, and people reckon she'd been there for the year dot. She ended up, she was there about 17 years, and then she went to Oakley West School.
Left her mark there.
She probably did.
Always a mark.
They didn't like her, but as a teacher, she taught me, if you couldn't learn from Annie Hodge, you couldn't learn from anybody. She put nobody dead say boo to a goose. In those days, there were no borrowed pens. You had pen and ink and little inkwells. And people who were left-handed had a terrible job because everything would blot on their papers. And I remember when I first started teaching, I tried to teach some of the children who were left-handed to write right-handed. And I realised that was wrong. We had two little girls, I think their surname was Martin, and one of them was left-handed, and the most beautiful handwriting you could ever wish to get. It was in printing. Then when we went into third class, which was Annie Hodges' class, at about, I was seven, I was a bit younger than all of them, we learned to do running writing, which is cursive writing. Cursive writing, I find, is quicker than printing. Children don't only print now. If they don't print, they press a button, and they don't even print. So I remember also, when I first went away to the country, the postmaster here was Ernie Lawson. Now, Ernie Lawson had the post office, and whether it was a government post office or whether it's like they are now, where they have a franchise or something, but the Lawsons lived above the post office. He had a horse, and he went around Oakley with a horse. And he was the one who, when I was away in the country, I met a girl at Teachers College, and I was staying with her at Parks, and I got this phone call, you've been sent from Oakley to Murrumbi. And I said, where? And the girl I was with said, oh, that's great, that's near to where I am, at Yanko. I still didn't know where Yanko was. But anyway, I came home and had to go to the school and find the cleaner to open up the school to get what material I had left there, because I thought I was still there the next year. Anyway, everything has changed so much in those years. Oakley, that you talk about as being where you had trees, we just call them bushes. And round, down where this beautiful gardens are, that was all bush. There was nothing there. All of Oakley and Oakley West to us, because we didn't have cars. That was a different world. I know my Uncle John, my father's brother, he and his family were very interested in swimming, and they were quite big members of the Oakley Swimming Club. And that would be way back in the 30s. And also, we remember we had a treasurer here, Ray Stevens.
Oh, yes.
And
yes,
Ray,
we all remember Ray.
Money in the sauce.
He's a story, isn't
he? He should go on our personalities of Oatley list.
And he was the, and also, we had Lynn Stevens. She was our secretary here for many years. She had a little tape recorder. It was in the days before computers, and everything was on that. She's not a world person. She came to my birthday last year, but I think her son brought her. And I have written, run her up several times, but she does not remember so much. But I'm lucky. My memory is pretty good, and I remember Oakley when we just used to come down to things here. We used to have an empire.
Oh, yes.
And I remember being marched from the school back to here, and we would have, because we had nothing at Oakley Public School, there was no assembly hall, no nothing. The teacher's room for the 12 months I was there, we had a little gas burner stove, we could boil a kettle and make a cup of tea. That was all the facilities teachers had in those days. So everything changes, whether it's for the better or the worse, we don't know. It's certainly for the better for the young people today. And I don't think there's anything more. I remember Mrs. Cole, she used to have wonderful concerts over in Oakley School, out in the church. And there was a family here that worked very hard. Over there, the Kale family, they came here, Reuben Kale, Ben Kale. They first of all started up at St Paul's. They went over to OPS too and finished living over there. So the old homes in Oakley, very few of them are left. Ivy Firth's lovely old stone home, Betty and I went one day. We were horrified. It was all mud in the front where they were putting up a garage. But they blended it in very well with the old home that's there. And that house would be built before 22, so because ours was, ours only weatherboard and fibro. It's called 18. I remember it was first called 10A. Don't know why, but they must have changed it. But Oakley has changed a lot. There were no cars, you could walk around. These days, you're very lucky to get a parking spot. So, lots of things have changed. I hope you remember some of those people that I remember.
Well, June, that certainly deserves a cup of coffee. So, and Rafe has rescued the situation. Yes?
One little extra point on what was discussed then about Ernie Lawson. I originally came into Oakley, which is now the Oakley Cafe, in 1934. I was 7 months old. And Ernie Lawson used to, there was a vacant block of land next door, and Ernie Lawson used to keep Bess in there. He'd come down of a morning, put the reins on her, lead her up the street, put the saddlebags on, and head off and deliver the mail.
Wow. Wow. Thank you for that. Does anyone know, it's somebody else's birthday today, who's in her 90s?
The Queen.
Exactly. Does anyone have any memories of the Queen in Oakley?
On the train.
I walked up, I saw her at Mortdale.
I saw her at Pinkhurst.
Okay. Did anyone see her at Oakley? Because it's the show, the rail line is awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in that little park on the west side of the railway line,
yes.
I stood at the edge of that park and she was actually standing out on the back of it.
She was.
And
that's right.
She,
I don't know.
And I've said that to other people and they said, oh, she wasn't standing on the back.
No, she
of
was.
Like where they saw her, but it wasn't at Oakley. And that's a very...
So she was... Because when she got to Mortdale, she was out the back, still waving.
On a train.
At the back of the train. 54 visit, yes. So there we are. The Queen has an attachment to it. No doubt she remembers it like it was yesterday.
I the horn of the train.
Yes.
And there were people on the stage.
Right. 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 Well, there we are. That's, so that's another little bit of Oatley. Only a very little bit, but a bit of Oatley. But thank you for that, June. That was great.
I've got a little extra to add.
Yes.
To Anne Hodge. I also had Miss Hodge in second class at Oatley West.
What year?
The teacher up there that you will never forget.
What year? Sorry, what year?
But what was even more complicated in my situation, she lived next door but one to us as a teacher. And I was terrified.
Oh,
because
dear.
If the word spelt wrong, it couldn't read the sentence. And she'd say, I'll tell your parents.
Oh, that would be.
She was fierce.
That would be scary. What? When was that? What?
In the 50s.
50s, right. Yeah. That's what, yes. So she moved across from Oatley to Oatley West?
Yes.
Mid 50s? Or?
Well, I was 56. I was 56.
Right. The infant's headmistress. Right. She is clearly, I mean, her name comes up regularly at our meetings, so she's left her mark. More than the Queen.
Actually, her home was beautifully kept.
Right. And what was her address?
Rolly, her brother.
114 Warrenora.
Yes.
114, oh, right at the end there. Okay.
No.
And Miles Dunfield lived, he didn't live in Warrenora, but I think he lived in Maimai, didn't he?
His house is still there.
Yes, that's...
She had a brother, Rolly, who kept him so nice, but he, I imagine, as a child, I knew there was some physical disability about him, but I've since heard from other neighbours that he might have had cerebral palsy or something.
Right.
And she also had a brother, Owen, who was a solicitor in
Hillsborough. Oh, Owen Hodge, yes. That's right. He has his name on buildings.
Yeah, still there. His son's still.
Okay, that's great. Bill?
Yeah, one little bit of trivia that he brought up about the Queen's birthday. My brother's birthday today, by the way.
My granddaughter.
You're so lucky. You're so lucky. Tomorrow's Hitler's birthday. We'd have to have your birthday.
Oh. Is it tomorrow?
Yeah.
Well, Hitler fortunately is dead and gone. But how old was the Queen? 92? 91. Was last year.
Born 26.
Right. Okay. Well, she sounds, as far as I know, she's doing pretty well. Right. Well, we're really rolling. Any other memories that people want to share of people, places, incidents? I've got one down here. Nobody remembers, because it was in 1901, but it surprised me, and you may know about it. It's the Battle of George's River. The Battle of George's River. This happened, and I'll just read to you a little bit. It was over on Bill's, and if anybody finds my pieces of paper, it's in there too, Bill. I'm sure you'll run off with them. The Battle of George's River. The Battle of George's River was fought on the 26th, on November the 21st. The result of the attack and defence on November the 21st of the Georges River crossings cannot be considered satisfactory from any point of view. The mobility of the attacking force, the South Coast Column, with under Lieutenant Colonel Bailey, and its fine strategy must be freely admitted, but this force claimed credit for portion of the operation, which would have been impossible in actual warfare. In other words, it was a military exercise. But it was full on between 600 and 700 infantry and a few mounted rifles proceeded in the afternoon to Oatley. The station this side of the Como River, that's just in case we don't know where Oatley is, okay? This was in the Australian Town and Country Journal, dated 1901. The Cogra Company, meanwhile, having marched to Tom Ugly's Point to defend the crossing at that point, the remainder went to the heights overlooking the bridge with two field guns from the Royal Australian Artillery under Captain Dangar. Careful inspection could not disclose the enemy on the opposing site, though some persons maintained they could see men creeping along the foreshore on the southern or Como side of the river. At 4 o'clock, a gun was fired and the smoke showed up from a high point over an inlet marked on the map as Double Bay. Anyone familiar with Double Bay? We know the famous Double Bay, but that's...
Well, the gun made it like a Double Bay.
Well, could be.
There.
Yes, although Gunga Road is a very old name. You go back to the 1880s, they've got Gunga Road.
G-U-N-G-H-A, as it used to be spelled.
Yeah.
No bay, just Gunga.
Gunga Road. They didn't have the word bay.
They didn't, quite correct, yep.
The two defending guns were quickly brought in position and the fire was returned. Wow, this would have been fun. The infantry, meanwhile, under the cover of rocks and bushes, there we are, back in the bushes, climbing through the tea tree, in the foreground, kept up a rapid and what should have proved, had bullets been used, an effective fire upon the bridge, which of course is the railway bridge, and opposite shores. Suddenly a strong and continual fusillade was heard on the extreme left, and it subsequently transpired that Major Lee of the Submariner Miners, with a party disguised as picnickers, that's not fair, had landed unobserved at Sandringham and crossed the intervening rough country, came across the Cogra Company at Tom Oakley's Point and theoretically killed every member of that that force. And it goes on, had a real battle been raging, neither picnic parties nor anyone else, except engines of destruction, would have been upon the riverfront. In actual warfare, the command of the river would be one of the most important of the defences of Sydney. Puts you a different picture, doesn't it, of Sydney? This is 1901.
So it was only a mock battle.
It was an exercise. Yes, but it must have made a lot of noise.
Well, they must have had dummy guns.
Yeah, well, they had dummy bullets. So, I mean, they were firing blanks. If not indeed the most important, and the line of defence would have been much longer as it had been on November the 21st, and would have simply bristled with guns. The position under proper conditions would be impregnable. But with two guns, the proceedings neither gave an idea of what should or would have happened. The enemy being supposedly defeated, the ceasefire was sounded, but it evidently wasn't heard by the other side. And they kept on firing. Whence firing was kept up for some time longer. The guns were limbered up and driven off in the direction of Hurstfield. Gosh, it's a different world, isn't it? And the infantry were formed up to march to Oakley, where the Major General French, I might add, and the staff had already proceeded. Suddenly a gun was heard and seen at short range to be firing on the railway station. Investigation proved that this was one of the enemy's guns under Lieutenant Cox Taylor with an escort. And it goes on, the gun had been transported, dismounted across the Waniora River and Salt Pan Creek. Seems an awfully long way of getting here. In boats, the horses being swum across the river. A party of the Irish Rifles tackled the gun as an escort and claimed to have theoretically captured them all. This presumed capture, however, both Captain Hilliard and Lieutenant Taylor disputed and went on to Oakley. Altogether, as already stated, the afternoon's work proved nothing, beyond the fact that the South Coast Column had great tactical resources. So there's a different picture of Oakley. Boy.
Could this have been in the back of Sylvester's mind when he
built his castle? Perhaps he thought bows and arrows.
Sylvester's house. There's a gun pointed out towards the bridge.
Yep, so maybe he got the idea for building the castle from this mock battle.
Now, I'll just mention, talking about history, that we have Kim has put together, and Kim and Roger and others, we've worked on. This is our next plaque. This is the one for the Como Bridge. A beautiful job. More than just a blue plaque that says, you know, so-and-so was here. There's information about the construction of the bridge, and as you can see, some photos of the bridge in early use. So we'll be installing that one, and we have others on the way. So well done to. Well, it'll be on the rampart on the approach to the bridge. We haven't quite decided where it should go. There is a little bit of a problem. It's a bit exposed to vandalism down there because it's not well lit. So we're hoping that it'll work out.
But Julian, have you considered...
Yeah, we have considered putting a plastic frame over it, yes, and I think that's being researched. Anyway...
I've got another question for you when you finish.
Yep. So no, finished on that.
What you spoke about, and whatever else, somewhere along the line, because of my grandfather's involvement in the Hurstville Council, etc., 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 there was plans, and this might go to Bill, plans of a road that followed the river... from Botley Bay all the way up to wherever. And part of that road was the road in Opie Park that went right down to Limekill Bay, and that was supposed to go across and then back up into Peakhurst and follow the road up. Now, is there any history on that, Bill, that we know about?
There's nothing in any of the plans I've seen. Now, I went through Trove and the website for the all the land titles and that. There's nothing there, but then that doesn't mean... it's not there, you'd have to talk. Actually, Graham, the chair, is the best bloke to talk to. He knows how to use the system a bit better than I do.
Yeah. Following on that, Bill, at the corner of Baker Street and Marine Drive, where by the name of Fisher lives, some people may know him, that's where the compressor and what have you were built for that road to go through.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the idea was so that they could have a military convoy go all the way up the river, and there must be some records of it somewhere. And
it's
Pop told me this years ago.
It just shows a totally different worldview. I mean, the idea of a military attack from Sutherland, no, well, it just makes us laugh. But clearly, in 1900. They felt that there was Sydney was exposed.
It would have been the Victorians after Federation trying to take out New South Wales.
Well, we tried to protect the coastline for when the Second World War.
Well, that's
had
true.
The troops stationed at Denville Park, and all those beasts on there had troops with barbed wire and pickets everywhere.
So we say perhaps we shouldn't laugh too soon.
No.
Well, that night in our run straight after the Boer War, and we didn't have a Commonwealth Army, we had state armies over there.
That's right. Anyone who's been down to Warrnambool, they've got a wonderful gun emplacement, set of guns there, and these guns were aimed at the Russians in the 1870s. They thought the Russians were coming.
That's Fort Dennis.
Yes, yes.
And Southend.
Mm. I can see the Russians getting to Sydney, but not to Warrnambool somehow. Anyway.
That road. There's some mention... Terry, in the Oakley Park history of and the works during the Depression, the castle and all the roads, that the road going down to the bottom at Limekiln Bay was to be incorporated or part of that foreshore road all the way down.
Yeah, part of that would have been down Lake Street, would have went down the hill and goes up and following around and then down to Limekiln Bay. So
that's right.
But you can't go back. My grandfather's been dead for
100
years, but you can't
take it on. Yeah. So they stopped at the bottom of the hill because the land on the other side of over at Peakhurst was privately owned and they couldn't get hold of it.
Well, as we discovered when researching 1913-1914, there was a serious plan to put a 1,000-yard rifle range at Oakley Park. The cadets, and cadet being a cadet was a serious matter. They had to go all the way over to Long Bay for their rifle practice. Well, that's right, but that, fortunately they didn't put in the rifle range, but it would have been made a bit of a difference to Oakley Park.
So we had a Tasmanian crowd.
That's right.
And that's where the short banner came back first of all, that Marlins
spoke. Right. Right, that's an interesting point. Okay, other memories that we want to share? Okay, now look, we want to make this a feature of each of our coffee and chat. So you won't be allowed in next time without registering a memory. Okay.
There was a guy that could be worth investigating. He was the gardener on the eastern side of Oakley, and they civil all those gardens up, because when I was a kid, there were no gardens there.
Now, Roger's researching that for his talk at the end of the year. So we can.
There's a plaque just as you walk under the railway bridge, just as you're coming in onto the east side, there's a little plaque commemorating him, too.
That's not Doug Cry. You don't mean the Doug Cry. I mean, there is a plaque just there for Doug Cry.
When you just come out from under the railway bridge,
yes,
to the park, on the right hand side, there's a little plaque about the guy who did that.
Okay.
Now I want to talk about what they had to do with Dark Cross Gardens, because it's not working.
Well, you see the name behind you on the wall there? Talk to them. I don't know what their plan is. And in what sense don't you think it's working?
Well, there's no water in the ponds, there's only flowers.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely. And I can't understand why they took the two trees out.
In the park, yeah.
In the park, I can't understand that.
Doing it all the time.
What happened was they cut the trees down and now there's about 36 birds up on the wire looking to where the trees
were. Oh, that's grim. That's grim.
Very angry.
Well, there was a problem. Yeah, they're scared stiff of trees.
They trump back and fly over and hang out and sit on the
copy. Okay. The whole issue of trees, of course, is going to be an issue in our coming general election. When I say general, I mean general for George's River Council, which will be held on the 8th of September. 9th, thank you. That was just to see if you were listening. Graham.
I just
came
to mention
an
anchor on his surname, his name, Chris Lammers Ray. He lived over in Herschel Grove. He did all the gardens. And he was a very close friend of Pam's granddad. And Pam and I were the first married couple to have a photograph taken in the little park quality.
Right.
And it was free those days. Mm-hmm. Then it became a trend in their weddings. But we were the first couple through Ray. He organised, of course, through the council.
Oh, that's a memory, isn't it?
That's
Ray, the gardener. But that's a good point about why they haven't got they haven't connected the water up or something. Or it
used. Yes. I know they haven't got a cover for
the
walkway across the railway station because when it rains, it floods.
Yes.
Well, what a shock! I mean, it's very pretty in the sunshine, but there's not much to stop the rain.
They've been working there to cover that in, apparently.
Yeah.
What? There's 6 foot of it.
Oh, I don't know, but
when we went up to Archie Station for the sign, Roger organised with Mark Couray. Mark Couray went up on the walkway with us and he was noted that the wind and the rain come through this. He was getting something done about it. So I'd say that will cover the whole lot in eventually.
Scaffolding have to do some of it, but that's not done.
The scaffolding. Don't worry, put more holes in, please.
Yeah, well, they need to let the air through, you know. It's a
windy, wet place when it's blowing a gale up there.
I can't park my scooter up there, it's brown.
Okay, well, these aren't so much memories. These are things that need to be done around the place. But that's fair enough. It's very informal.
And the other thing, I'm talking to Mark Couray, that Oakley sign is supposed to be in the waiting room without
yeah.
And
yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
I was there for Easter Friday, and I went to this. And the thing is, I didn't know it was. I was asking people, where's our sign? And they didn't know.
Well, it's up there. There was a little function. It's certainly on the.
But
it's in the so-called waiting room where the ticket office is.
What about where the girl serves tickets?
Yep. Yeah.
Well, I look through the window, I couldn't see a dog.
Well, go in the door and unless somebody's taken it down, it's still there. Okay, now that's a good point. With no ticket sales, they may keep the door locked. I mean, it was always open.
There's our sign up there in the corner.
Yeah, how the hell
can I couldn't see it looking from the...
You've got to go inside.
I know it's inside.
Well, what room is that supposed to be in?
There's where you buy your ticket. There.
Well, that's the problem though, Roger. Nobody buys tickets.
Well, you've got to go in that room. That's all I can understand.
If the door's locked, because nobody's buying tickets, then it's a problem. Inside.
But anyway, there's a little sign on it saying we donated it and when it's from it, what it is. And you might know that the old switch room at the end there, at the northern end, is being cleaned out, and there's a map there, and it was used until 1996, this particular switch room. So they're going to keep that as some sort of heritage site. We're going to talk to them about that. It's not going to be open for people in particular, but we're going to see if we can make some arrangement in there. Because at the moment, you can get in through the door into the building, but they want that to happen. But they are interested in the history.
So it is certainly there, but as has been said, if they're locking that door because nobody needs to go in, then you have no access. Oh, okay. So, all right, folks. Another thing that's come up that we'd like to Bill has been doing some troving and come up with a whole range of really good real estate maps from the early days, and these do tell the story of Oatley as it developed as a community and a place to live. And seems to me that one of these days we'll do as a presentation on the story of these maps and how they changed and how they developed and so on. So that's something to look forward to. Now, talking about presentations, things that are coming up. Now, Bill, where's he gone? All right, well, I'll come back to that. Bill, do you want to... This business of the walk, the Anzac walk, you don't know anything about that?
All I know is Roger sent me an email a couple of weeks ago to highlight it, and that's as much as I know about it.
All right. Now, you did leave a link there, so I don't know if people got that. There's an Anzac. It's not on Anzac Day. It's on the 29th, I think.
It's being conducted by COGRA, well, Georges River Council, but the local histories librarian, John Johnson, from that area is conducting a walk from, I think, the memorial here to
Mortdale. Yes, that's right. From the Oatley Memorial through to the Mortdale Memorial in the Fig Tree Park and then back again on the 10 o'clock on the 29th. But you need to let them know. So if you're interested in that, come and have a chat with us. We'll give you a link.
Talk to the people at the front desk. They might be able to help you.
Is there going to be a service here in Oatley at all?
For Anzac Day?
Yeah, for Sunday. Anzac.
Well, there always is.
2 o'clock in the Memorial Park. So
2 o'clock Memorial Park.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. On Anzac Day. Yeah, that's on Anzac Day, right?
Anzac Day will be at Mortdale. That's the combined service of Mortdale in the morning.
Right. So will there be anything over here?
Nothing here.
Not on Anzac Day.
Okay. But it's on Sunday.
We alternate every year.
We on the Sunday.
It rotates.
Yeah, rotates. Yeah. Pinto's Mortdale.
Okay.
So when you say Memorial Park, is that the one that's
going to see? Yeah, it's the Memorial.
Yes. You know where the gun is?
It's the one on Boundary Road.
Oh, sorry, the Mortdale Memorial, yes. It's the one with the huge fig tree, the real fig tree.
It's renamed Memorial Park last year by the new council.
Right.
Isn't there a propeller there?
Yes, there's a little bandstand. It's a very nice little park. All right, folks. Now, our next event, and you've all got this in your calendars, but I'll remind you, is on the 26th of...